Hello there, I'm Sophie Love. Thank you for joining me for the very first episode of the Naked Farmers podcast. You might be asking yourself, who the hell am I and what do I know about farming? The short answer is that after 12 years of living on our 400 acres, I know more than the average city slicker, but a lot less than the farmers we're going to meet here. That's the whole point of the pod, to find out how food and fibre are grown and raised in Australia and try and build a bridge between city people buying their food in supermarkets and the people who do the hard work on the land. So why did a 40-year-old ex-vegan buy a farm? Yep, that's right. I was a vegan for over 20 years. And I guess that's what slightly gives me the impetus to do this thing, because I've sat on both sides of this divide and I want to try and come to a place in the middle where there's more understanding, more dialogue, and a better relationship. You may have noticed a pommy twang in my voice. That's because I am British by birth, Australian by choice. I left England aged 21 in Maggie Thatcher's austerity era and lived and worked in Hong Kong for a year before embarking on the ubiquitous backpacking trip to Australia. I arrived in the Hawke heyday as you were celebrating the bicentennial. I fell in love with the sunny skies, sandy beaches and friendly people. I didn't get very far on my travels. I met a man and stayed with him far longer than was good for me. But they say everything happens for a reason. And that relationship that almost destroyed me also gave me the greatest of gifts, residency in this incredible country. For over 10 years I lived and worked in Sydney, working my way up its beachside suburbs until a series of events made me think that a brief sojourn back in the bosom of my family in England might be a good idea. I thought I'd just go for 6 months and regroup, rethink, recalibrate. But months turned into years, as they do. While I was there, I had accrued a different kind of family, 2 horses and a dog. I had also just bought and renovated a little house when I looked in my passport one day and realised that if I didn't get my runner's ass back to Australia in the next 6 months, I would lose my precious residency. So I packed up that house, 2 scruffy horses and pedigree puppy, and flew us all back to start again. Normally owners are not allowed to come and meet the aeroplanes that bring their horses into Australia, but because my mare was such a bad loader, it was decided that it was better if I was there to try and help get her back on the truck to quarantine. The horses came over on the same flight as the Olympic horses from the Rome Olympics, so there were all these sleek, glossy, enormous horses. Show jumpers and dressage horses getting off the plane. And then there were my 2 nags looking like woolly mammoths. One of the grooms looked at me and said, "You brought those 2 over from the UK?" And I looked back at him with tears in my eyes and said, "They're my family." While they were all in quarantine, I was sitting on the phone and on the computer applying for jobs. I'd only ever lived in Sydney, but you couldn't have 2 horses in Sydney. So I tried applying for rural jobs, but everyone just laughed at my inexperience. No, I couldn't shear a sheep, crack a whip, make damper, drive a tractor, or any of the other tasks they wanted. I could identify a crane from 50 yards, write ads and articles about anything on earth, probably sell ice to the Eskimos, pressure wash and paint stables, exercise a polo pony, run a marathon and many other things, but the truth was I'd never even been to the bush, let alone acquired bush ranger skills. I bought a car, and when the international horse transit people asked where the horses were to be delivered to on release from quarantine, I honestly said, "I don't know." And they said, "Well, you'd better find out." so I got in the car with the puppy and started driving. We ended up in Tamworth with a tick-sick pup, a big vet bill, and time on my hands, so I wandered the streets looking in real estate windows and saw a farmhouse and acreage for rent on the outskirts of town. I took it. Midwinter, mid-millennium drought. Just me, two nags, and a naughty puppy who soon acquired a kitten friend. We learned that lots of rural communities don't take kindly to outsiders, that living without water is impossible, and that the stoicism, resourcefulness, and resilience of farmers can never be underestimated. I got a job in the pink and blue confection-like building of the Northern Daily Leader, where there was one computer shared between 12 sales staff, and took a step back in time. It was a baptism by dry, and if it wasn't for the kindness of my wonderful neighbours who pumped water for me from their huge spring-fed dam, I wouldn't be alive to tell the tale today. I saw my first huge brown snake, wedge-tail feasting on a lamb, enormous kangaroos, and learned that farming in Australia can be like scratching a living on a rock. You have to love it, and your animals, to survive. After 6 months, I took a job back in Sydney and had to look for somewhere with room to roam for the horses and I. We found a sweet spot in Kangaroo Valley, but the two-hour commute each way was too much. I decided to set up my own little marketing business to add to my side hustle, importing horse and stable gear from Europe. Then I could stay home with the horses while working across three continents and time zones to pay the bills. I loved Kangaroo Valley and its tight-knit, like-minded community. I had beautiful neighbours, and every day I ran down to Flat Rock, the ancient Aboriginal natural-hewn birthing and women's pool, or if I was feeling lazy, the shorter run through the river and over cattle-strewn river flats, past two little weatherboard holiday houses. "This is what I want," I muttered each time I passed. After 2 years there, the landlord decided to sell, and there was no way I would ever be able to afford Kangaroo Valley prices. So I looked further afield, determined to bite the bullet and buy. I didn't know how. I drove right down to Eden and almost bought a pretty little cottage inland of Bermagui in the middle of a dairy farm. Knowing what I know now about shit and flies, I am very glad I withdrew my offer. My car was broken into in Eden, and wallet, ID, etc. stolen. It was only thanks to the kindness of a mechanic who filled up my car and fixed the damage with the promise of payment when I got home that I did get home. So then I looked north, and the first place I saw on the internet search was a little cottage on the river that looked exactly like the ones on my runs in Kangaroo Valley. After Tamworth and the big dry, I had vowed never to live without water again, and this looked lush and temperate. I drove up to look. I couldn't even see the river, the blady grass and bracken fern were so high. The arrogant salesperson in his two newer Cubra talked down to the little lady as I tried to make sense of what I saw. It was a long way from anywhere, on the wrong side of the river, and completely off the grid. I fell hopelessly in love. It just felt like home. All my life I had kept moving, looking for something. Here I finally felt I could stop and settle down. I may have had no idea what I was doing, but I knew I needed help with this crazy dream, so I arranged to come up again and get some on-site quotes from tradies so I could work out the financials. George was the weathered old farmer with twinkling eyes who roared up from the river on his quaddie and announced, "You know the river floods, don't you?" He was trying to scare me, but I don't scare easy, luckily. Then the builders and plumber who quoted for the renovation. The last guy to roll up was the solar guy who was a neighbour. He had 400 acres on a different river nearby. Here was a kind man, beautiful blue eyes and a smiling face. We stood and talked in the shade of the trees for ages. I had to chase him for his quote, ringing at night when he was home from clambering on roofs, and he would answer all my questions about the area, buying acreage, solar and more. He started work on the first day I took possession and soon realised that the builder I had hired was all talk and no action. I fired him and Jed, for that was his name, took over. It turned out he was a licensed builder and an electrician, and our friendship grew. I fed him stir fries, and he solved all my problems. I had never known such a kind and unassuming man. He won my heart. Exactly 1 year to the day since we met, we were married by the tie rail, and 6 months after that, I birthed our son in the bathroom he had renovated for me. Jed gave me my first Jersey cow, our first Christmas together, and that started another love affair. I never envisaged being a farmer, but when Ben was old enough to start solids, I realised he needed meat, and after seeing what was on offer in the supermarkets and local butchers, I decided that we would grow our own. That's when we started taking food really seriously, and slowly learning about soil health, pasture management, backburning, beekeeping and more. We've had plenty of disasters, several successes, lots of fun and many tears. Until just recently in this bloody drought, we had 50 head of cattle, too many horses, 20 head of alpaca, a few sheep, 2 fat pigs, and a farm stay and food business. Over the past 12 years, I have delivered calves and sheep, had my arms up more bottoms than I care to count, learned innovative uses for superglue, cleaned maggots out of all sorts of nasty injuries and orifices, and seen plenty of things I wouldn't wish on anyone, as well as revelled in wide skies, star-filled nightscapes, the wonder of fireflies, the force and fury of fires, flood, wind and hail. So much beauty and heartbreak, the cycle of life and death, the brutality of Mother Nature as well as her wonders. This has been a brutal year with drought, stock losses and bushfires. I'm feeling pretty broken. So how do farmers cope with all that nature throws at them? What are their strategies? Who do they grow for and sell to? What drives them and breaks them? Who supports and appreciates them? What do they think about climate change, glyphosate, vegans and more? Let's find out. Now that you know who I am, we'll get stuck into talking to farmers. Hopefully the little knowledge I do have will help inform probing questions that explain farming and food production to our city cousins. We all need to better understand the complexities of farming in this vast, dry continent, as well as meet the people who put food on our tables. Subscribe now in Spotify or Apple Podcasts and come along for the ride.